Good evening and welcome to this live debate among the Democratic candidates for Mayor of Albany, Mayor Kathy Sheehan, Common Council President Carolyn McLaughlin, and Common Councilor Frank Camiso Jr. I'm Alan Shartok. Tonight's panelists are News Channel 13 anchor Benita Zahn and WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. We expect a robust, revealing hour of debate. First, the ground rules. The audience here at the Linda has agreed to hold its applause until the end of the debate. Each campaign was allotted 25 seats in our venue. The rest of the audience is made up of members of the public. There will be no opening statements. The candidates will have time for brief closing statements. There will be no questions from the audience, but we are taking questions on social media. Use the hashtag AlbanyDebate to join the conversation. Straws were drawn backstage to determine the order. Mayor Sheehan will begin. The order will then rotate through the evening. Candidates have 90 seconds apiece to answer each question. As moderator, if I feel an answer merits a short rebuttal, I will allow a candidate to respond. Our first question comes from Benita Zahn.
Alan, thank you very much. And obviously, we prepared for this. We have our questions planned, but we also opened it up to social media. And some of the questions we received, we will share with you and we will be asking this evening. And in essence, the question that came from Pamela Chris Howard, it becomes sort of an overview of all this. She says, of the three issues, which do you consider the priority and why? Crime, affordable housing, or addressing problems with the infrastructure? These are questions we will get to this evening. But we're going to start with money, city finances. It's become an annual tradition. Albany's budget contains a gap to be filled, hopefully, by state aid later on. Much of the property within the city is state land and therefore cannot be taxed. So what is your plan to secure ongoing commitments for state aid or pass a budget that does not rely on aid that might not come through?
Well, first, I'd like to thank you for hosting this debate. I want to thank AMC and WNYT and the panel here. And it is really a privilege to be able to address the broader audience here in the city, so we appreciate you making this a possibility. My administration, I think, has taken an approach that has led the city to an unprecedented $12.5 million in new aid for our city. That was new money that came because we took a very strategic approach, opening our books to the state, making our case, making investments that allowed us to become more effective and efficient, that resulted in us having a budget for 2017 that was a 2% reduction from the prior year, the biggest reduction in more than 15 years. But we need to continue to ensure that that $12.5 million becomes permanent, because it's not a bailout. The city of Albany receives $128 per capita in aid from the state. That compares to an average statewide of $300 per person. And so the residents of Albany should not expect to have to cut services and seek to fill those gaps with unnecessary increases in taxes, fees, and fines, because we should be treated like every other municipality in the state. I think that we have made huge strides in convincing of the state of that, and we will continue to insist that this become permanent moving forward.
Thank you, Kathy. Next question to Carolyn.
Same question.
We here in Albany have the dual challenge of trying to manage taxes at the same time as we have to increase revenue for city operations. And I think that as we look forward and look at my vision and the perspective that I have on this, I believe that what I see in my view is that we have to look at auditing in our city, we have to look at 21st century investing in our city, and we have to look at enhancing or building upon current public-private partnerships. And what that looks like for me, that looks like us taking the opportunity to look at all of the tax exemptions that are in the city of Albany, because if we find that they are not justified, we need to begin to collect those taxes. A 21st century banking for me really makes us think that let's look back at, let's say, 5 years of our banking statements. What are we doing with the money that we do have? How hard is it working for us? And then we also need to look to our neighbor on Fuller Road, SUNY Poly. I believe that we need to foster an agreement between Albany and SUNY Poly that is a win-win situation. Here is a $25 billion enterprise that employs over 3,000 people sitting right out on Fuller Road. And I think the kind of relationship that we can have with them is one that will encourage them to help us with our infrastructure.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Frank?
Yes, thank you. And I'm glad that you asked that question first, because it is so important in our city that we're able to maintain affordable public services. That's what our taxpayers expect here in the city of Albany. And there is a focus on the budget. Of course, just a few months ago, PFM conducted an audit of the city in June and had provided findings that said that there was a $21 to $23 million deficit here in the city of Albany. So it is very serious for our taxpayers, very serious for our workers, that there is security here in the city going forward. My sense is that we need to make a credible plan to the state. And for me, I will make that credible plan as mayor. We certainly need to have a long-term, multi-year budget. And we also need to determine if there's other sources of revenue here within city boundaries. And while we have been fast in the city to note our status as a state capital, and that's correct, I also believe that there are discretionary exemptions as well, and we need to have integrity of our tax rolls. So for me, we will look at both the charitable exemption in the city, much of which is good, but there are questionable uses of the charitable exemption. And we will also look and take a hard look at the economic development incentives that are provided to developers that are developing luxury housing here in our city. Of course, we know there are many locations whereby there is economic development incentives, and we need to ensure that they are paying their appropriate share to the city, both on the charitable and economic development end.
I'm going to give 30-second rebuttal to Mayor Sheehan.
Well, I just want to clarify, PFM did not do an audit of the city. It was a management report, and it did not find a deficit. It merely identified, as we do every year, as every municipality does, the gap between revenue and potential increases in your operating expenses. That's what a mayor has to do every year. That's how you balance a budget. It's how families balance their budgets. It's how cities balance their budgets. And we have managed to that, and that report identified that our city has strong fiscal management in place.
Thank you. Our next question will begin with Carolyn, and it's a follow-up to our first one. That state-funded report on the city's finances found that Albany could save much-needed money by cutting the size of its police force. The Sheehan administration in the past has also considered making cuts to the fire department. As mayor, would you be willing to make cuts to public safety departments? And if so, how would you maintain current safety and service levels in this city?
Well, I don't believe that we should cut public safety services in our city, because I believe that when people make a choice of a city that they're going to live in, the safety in that city is one of the major factors that determines whether they're going to call Albany their home. So I don't agree. And I know the report also said that there were other cities that were larger than us that had smaller police and fire departments. But that is what works for them. Albany is Albany, and this is what works for us. We have the level of safety that we do have here in terms of the crime level, how we've been able to manage that with our police force. And we've been able to at least provide a certain level of safety in terms of fire department, where we've had no casualties as it relates to them fighting fires. So I believe that we need to maintain the force that we have. And no, I would not be a proponent for reducing our public safety personnel.
The same question now to Frank.
Well, when I look at the city budget, I know that there are areas that we can save money. And we have talked about the need over the long term to look at our workforce, and we can take advantage of that demographic of 50 to 59-year-old employees over the next several years, and that's something that we will take a hard look at. We will have a strategic plan in the city. As it relates to police and fire services, I could not at this time justify an immediate cut to those services. I look at our fire department, and I know that they're doing some great work, and I think there's some additional work they can do as well for the city that could provide value to us. When I think of code enforcement, I think of ambulatory services. Those are things that we can take a hard look at. With our police officers in the city right now, again, I cannot justify an immediate cut there. We've had a fourfold increase in shootings just this year. And to talk about cutting police during that time period would be something that would cause a great level of debate and unnecessary harm to the community more broadly. Again, my sense is we have some great firefighters, great police officers. I know we make a significant investment in those employees, but we do because they have such an important job. And we need to have a level of security in all our neighborhoods such that families can feel safe in Albany, whether they be in West Hill, Arbor Hill, or the South End. We need to have that level of safety in place.
Thanks, Frank.
And now to Mayor Sheehan.
Well, that was the great thing about that report. We really worked with PFM in developing that report, and it contained a number of recommendations. They weren't mandates, they were recommendations and ideas. We police differently in this city because we have such a deep commitment to community engagement and community policing. So our policing levels are where they need to be in order for us to deliver on what we've heard loud and clear from our residents, which is that we want neighborhood engagement. We want our officers on bikes. We want them walking the beat. We want to make sure that we can also continue to patrol the streets and have traffic safety. And so we think that those numbers are where they should be. And the report acknowledged that because we're the capital city, it did, and because our population doubles every day with people coming into the city to work, that those numbers, while high, were not something that were unjustifiable. I think with respect to the fire department, you know, we took a hard look at the fire department when I came into office. I didn't cut the number of firefighters. We had made a proposal to reduce the number of apparatus to match the number of firefighters that we had. We were running a piece of apparatus on overtime every single day. We were able to find that savings elsewhere. That's what happens when you work with labor, when you sit down, when you have conversations, and you're able to find a way to get to a result. And so we now have increased our number of firefighters because we continued in that spirit and succeeded in getting a SAFER grant, a federal grant, to help to make sure that we are at full strength for our fire department, something that I very much supported.
Thank you, Kathy. Benita?
Thank you, yes. And we're going to dovetail on that last question as we move into this one, and we'll start with Frank when I ask the question. This deals with crime. Like most cities its size, Albany has endured a share of violent crime, which authorities say stems in large part from gangs and the drug trade. What's your current view of public safety in the city, and do you believe the current community policing approach and diversion programs should continue?
Well, I'm glad that you asked about diversion programs as well, because that's a big part of this equation, is that we start to have that great relationship with the school district where we have programming in place related to truancy abatement, gang prevention, and recreation as well, and that we have those recreation programs in the summer and after school, of course. So we need that strong programming in place first. And then thereafter, there is a way with the police department to reduce crime. One of the things I've talked about during this campaign is to have a traffic division in the city of Albany whereby police officers would be deployed throughout our city. And it would be my goal, my objective as mayor, to ensure that every day residents in Albany see a police officer outside of a car. And we think we can achieve that. And of course, having that traffic division in place gives us an opportunity as well to refocus our efforts in the police department. We spent such a great deal of effort over the past several years talking about a red light camera program that I felt, before we even voted on it, was ineffective. For me, we can do so much better. We could have police officers out throughout all neighborhoods in the city, equally distributed amongst the wards, and we provide a level of service then where people can have confidence that they saw a police officer and they could build those relationships with the police department.
Thanks.
Thank you. Kathy?
Well, we have a traffic division, and as a matter of fact, its productivity is up 10%. That said, any crime in the city is one crime too many, and any shooting is one shooting too many. So even though we can say that our overall Part 1 crimes are down and that they're at lows compared to the five-year average, we have seen an uptick in violence. And the communities in which that violence is occurring are communities that we need to ensure that we are continuing to engage in. You know, the the International Association of Police Chiefs tells mayors all the time, when you see an uptick in crime, don't jump ship. You need to stick behind the work that is being done and the 21st century policing strategies that we've implemented in the city of Albany to such a degree that the Obama administration, the Obama White House, and the U.S. Department of Justice selected Albany as one of 15 cities that they're using They're coming in, they're looking at what we're doing, they're looking at what works, and they're spreading that to other communities. So we need to continue this work. And it's not easy work. The causes of crime are many. And we've got to focus on ensuring that we're connecting young people to jobs, that we're doing all that we can to prevent crime. It's about more than just policing, but our community policing is allowing us to connect with our young people and to connect with people to get them back to the workforce.
Thank you, Mayor. Carolyn?
I believe when we start looking at crime in our city, we have to look at it as sort of like a health and safety issue, because, and not just look at it as, I think the crime is just a symptom of another problems that we have. Particularly, it's an economic problem for me. It's jobs, jobs, jobs. The individuals that we are seeing that are idle in our community, if they were otherwise engaged, I believe that we would continue to see crime go down. And I think if we begin to look at crime from that perspective, then it will be easier to find the solutions that we need. We have to go, the Albany County, Albany Police Department, yes, it's one of the top 15 in the country. We're doing some things right, but we're not perfect. And some of the things that were cited was the community engagement that we have, the pop-up barbecues and those kinds of engagement. But I tell you, what are we doing after we've served the last hot dog and hamburger? What are we doing to make sure that individuals live in their community feel like that the police are there to protect them, and when they report something, somebody is coming to see about what's going on in their community. So I think we have to, as has been stated, the diversion programs that we have, they're wonderful, but I also think that we have to respond to people with the issues that are being put forth to our police department on a daily basis. If you see something, you say something, but someone has to respond to you as well.
Thank you.
Well, we'll drill down a little bit more with one of the issues that was raised in the last answer now, and this will begin with Kathy. Following up on this topic, the city's red light camera program has been hailed by some advocates as improving safety at intersections, but revenue projections for that program have fallen far short. As mayor, would you like to continue, expand, or scrap the red light camera program, and why?
Well, currently, the data is showing us that the intersections where we have red light cameras are safer. And the program doesn't cost taxpayers a dime. So the implementation of it, the purchase of the cameras, the installation of the cameras, all of that is paid for by the revenue that comes from the red light cameras and the third party that we've contracted with to operate those cameras. So the original projections with respect to revenue were built into the budget, and then we had to manage to a budget that didn't include that revenue. That's what happens over the course of a year, and we were able to manage to that. So the revenue piece of it was always projected to go to near zero. We did not expect this to be a continuing revenue stream for the city, because the all of the projections show you have a spike and then people comply and you see a reduction in that revenue. I think that the intersections are safer. I think that we do have a red light camera running problem in this city that was partially actually dealt with because over the course of debating red light cameras, it was agreed that we would go to a 4-second yellow. And I think that has helped with public safety. So as we continue to roll out complete streets in our city, making sure that our streets are safe for bicyclists and pedestrians and transit, we need to look at this. But I think it's a misconception to say that this is costing taxpayer dollars or taking money away from something else that we could be doing.
Thank you, Kathy. Carolyn?
I think the perception that we had with red light cameras coming in was that they were going to generate revenue, not so much take away from something else that we were doing, but the fact that we were going to generate $2.5 million to add to our operating fund. But that didn't happen. And that is the perception that we all had, that money was going to come in to help us with our other expenses in the city. That did not occur. We also believe that the placement of the red light cameras was also predominantly in areas where people can least likely afford to pay for a $50, $75 ticket if they were to be so inclined to receive one of these. So, and I think there were just so many issues that related to people not wanting red light cameras in the community in the first place, and yet we still did them. We did not respond to what we heard from the community as it related to them. The placement of them, and I think that, for me, has always been a big concern. If people say something, they tell us they want certain things in our city, they respond to questions that we ask, and then we go the opposite direction. And this going in the opposite direction here did not profit the city at all and meet any expectations that I know that I had and what was projected to me, that we were going to have a revenue increase because of them.
Thank you. Frank?
Red light cameras have been controversial since they were first introduced, and of course, I had voted against red light cameras as a member of the Albany Common Council on numerous occasions. And for me, we can no longer continue on with this program. Now, of course, I would like to first consult with the police chief in January. We'll have a permanent police chief at that time, and we will discuss this program, but I will be terminating that program, of course. There is ample evidence to suggest that we can have police officers outspread throughout the community in a traffic division, whereby there is a police officer that is trained that can issue traffic citations to motorists throughout our city. And that revenue in those instances then would actually come to the city general fund, as opposed to going to a multinational vendor. And that has been a problem here in the city of Albany. Of course, many people have received red light camera tickets, and those tickets find their way to a subsidiary in Massachusetts of a company from Europe. So for me, I will do everything in my power as mayor to keep our dollars that people earn and work hard for in the city of Albany within city boundaries and throughout our entire city. In addition, I must say, this was something that I know it was said earlier that this was something we all support. I did not support the red light camera program. There were many of us that saw ahead of time that this program could cause major pitfalls for our city. Thank you.
That's time. Thank you. Our next question comes from social media, Mark Tarr, using the hashtag AlbanyDebate on Facebook. And we will begin with Carolyn. Previously vibrant commercial strips are looking rather bleak and desolate. What can you and the city do to help turn this situation around?
If we look to the diverse and multicultural community that we have real opportunities for economic development in our city. Our downtown, I consider it a bus stop. Central Avenue seems to be thriving. Our city has become an international city. And if we take advantage of the fact that we have so many cultures bringing richness to our city, then that's, to me, there's an opportunity there to enhance the economic development in our neighborhoods, particularly our downtown. We also have young entrepreneurs, a segment of millennials in our community who have talents, and business, small businesses that need to be on Main Street. And if we have an opportunity to get with some of our commercial real estate people and put them in the same room with some of these young entrepreneurs, and let's talk about how can we work together. You have empty space. Why can't I use your space? Give me an opportunity to start up my business. You have an opportunity to fill up your space. You can pay your taxes, even if it's just a matter of I pay you rent so that you can make sure you meet the taxes on your building. Let's work together so that we can increase economic opportunity in our city. Our downtown can become more vibrant. Our neighborhood shops can become more vibrant. And people will have an opportunity to start small businesses. If you are going to have...
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Same question to Frank next. Thank you.
We can significantly promote locally owned, locally operated businesses in the city of Albany. We just need to have the right structure in place as it relates to promoting economic development. First, taxes were mentioned, and of course, we do have a crippling tax rate here in the city of Albany that right now is about $47 per thousand. And we need to do much better in that regard. I think that there are ways, again, we talked earlier about ways to produce more revenue for the city. I think there's ways over time to reduce expenses, and we can have a better tax environment here with the city. Additionally, though, we must look at our regulatory environment. Right now, it's very hard for people to do business in the city of Albany. And if we have the appropriate structure in place at the buildings department, I believe we can have more people come in and have taxable, and I emphasize taxable, businesses in our city. Now, finally, as it relates to our city's IDA, which is supposed to be promoting private economic development in our city, we have proposed, and I have proposed during this campaign, a total overhaul of that structure, whereby we would actually insource that economic development management function back into city government, where you would have folks running the economic development answerable to the mayor and the Albany Common Council. I think that's a much better structure than the Capitalized Albany Corporation, which right now is effectively in charge of the economic development policies in the city, and we don't know that those policies are benefiting taxpayers and residents throughout the city of Albany.
Kathy?
So I can assure that the accountability to the taxpayers is there. As a matter of fact, our IDA has the lowest cost per job created of any IDA in the region. The state average is $2,900 per job. Our IDA does it at $690 per job. So we are accountable and have a very open process and a welcoming process for entrepreneurs at every level. It's not just a place for big businesses. And one of the programs that I put in place as mayor was a facade improvement program, again, geared towards those small entrepreneurs where we provide matching dollars to any business that is looking to do improvements of the front of their building, if they need new energy efficient windows. And so we've worked with a number of businesses to help them, those small businesses, to help them improve their facades. We've done ribbon cuttings at dozens of small businesses. These are businesses that create jobs, they create opportunities for families right here in the city of Albany. And that work will continue. We have seen significant investments along neighborhoods really scattered throughout the city. We still have work to do, but one of the other things that my administration did was take on the very difficult task of rezoning the city, making those rules easier, making it simpler for businesses to open, and having our zoning match what we've done in our city and what our neighborhoods look like. And that is also driving significant investment.
Thank you both, all three of you very much. I want to move on now to our public schools. The Albany School District, which recently hired a new superintendent, graduated only 58% of its students in 2016. What do you believe the role of the mayor is in improving student performance in Albany schools, in the school district in general? And specifically, what would you do as mayor in this area? And Frank, we'll start with you.
Well, I think you're right to note that there are challenges with our school district as it relates to graduation rate and the affordability for taxpayers. And I fully recognize that outcome that we have in place here in the city of Albany. Now, we must recognize that the school district is receiving children at a time in the morning and letting them out of school in the afternoon. There are a whole host of social ills that they inherit at that time when children come to school. And we have to do much better to have a better set of services in place for these children and their families. Now, one of the things that has been most frustrating to me is I think that our school board and our school board presidents and certainly our superintendents seem to be just a revolving door. And we've had no consistent leadership over in the school district. So at one point very soon, I would imagine there will be talk about mayoral control in Albany as it relates to schools or mayoral input as it relates to schools. That's something we have to take a hard look at. And of course, the mayor and ultimately the city council members are ultimately more accountable than the board members. Of course, anything that is said to the elected officials here today, we hear about taxes all the time. We hear about schools all the time and programming all the time. It may be well past time that we explore a concept like mayoral control here in the city.
Kathy?
Thank you, Kathy.
So what I have done as mayor is be a founding member of the Albany Promise. I recognize that we all have a role to play in ensuring that our children succeed. And when we talk about school failure, we have to acknowledge that we have a healthcare system that is failing many of our children, a social services system that is failing many of our children, access to housing and safe, affordable housing that is failing our children. And so we have to work together and get out of our silos. And we have succeeded in many initiatives. You can't boil the ocean, is what we say, because there are so many things that we need to be doing with our schools. But we have focused on what we can do collaborating together across various groups to change the outcomes with our kids. And one of the areas that I'll talk about is youth development. One of the challenges was our summer youth employment program. It wasn't really providing a career trajectory for our kids. I want kids to have that summer youth employment program on their resume and have employers throughout the city say, I want to hire that person because I know that they learned really great skills in that program. And so we took on ourselves as part of collective impact, taking that program and changing it so that it does provide that. And I'm happy to say that actually we lost a fair number of kids from our summer youth employment program this year because they got hired in jobs that paid more and where they got more hours.
Thank you.
Carolyn.
I've often said that there are three reasons why a family chooses to live in a city. It's the affordability of the city, the safety of the city, and the level of education that they're going to be able to provide for their children. So I've been an advocate and been a person there who listens to what is going on in the school district. We have to have a front, we have to be at the table. We can't be on the sidelines watching decisions that are being made in the school district. We have to be an active participant, sharing what we're doing in the city with what they're doing at the school district. So there may be some opportunities for us to make joint decisions. So I would advocate, maybe not as a school board member, but until we get to that point where the mayor has control of the city school district, we have to make sure that we are a welcome member at the table when discussions are taking place. I know they have meetings that go on and on, but I also believe that there still is an opportunity. We should be there. And I do think that with a new school superintendent in place, we think that we have an opportunity to get some new, fresh ideas from her that she's bringing in from her wealth of experience in another school district. And I think if we don't take the time to do that, then we are doing a disservice to our children, and we will again have problems with people making a decision as to whether they're going to call Albany home. The schools are very important, and we have to make them a top priority.
Thank you, Ian.
Thank you. We said at the outset we would be discussing infrastructure. We've reached that point in the evening. So this question deals with Albany's infrastructure. A major water main break about a year ago closed a stretch of South Lake Avenue and surrounding streets for weeks on end. As the city's infrastructure continues to deteriorate, what approach do you think needs to be adopted to replace the water lines, and how can future breaks be prevented given the city's limited finances? And Kathy, we start with you.
My administration has invested more in our water and sewer infrastructure over the last 4 or so years than had been previously invested for several years before that. We have been able to increase the capital spend that we are spending every year out of the operating budget on capital investments, and we've received literally millions of dollars in grant funding to do incredible water infrastructure projects. Part of the reason that that water main break took so long to fix was that we were already planning a major investment in that intersection, so we used that opportunity to do some of the work in advance. And so we were in there longer than we would have been if we had just gone in and fixed the broken pipe. We're not just fixing the break. We're improving and upgrading the system. And we've been able to make these investments without having a rate increase at all. I think the last water rate increase was in 2012, and there's no rate increase scheduled for next year. We are also subject to a consent order from the DEC to deal with stormwater runoff into the Hudson River. That was an agreement that was entered into before I became mayor. We are ahead of schedule. We've done some really great and innovative projects that have resulted in a reduction in stormwater runoff, and we will continue that work. We are on, as I said, we're a little bit ahead of schedule, and we have the funding in place to complete that project.
Thank you. Carolyn?
I believe that if we're going to deal with this problem, we have to have a long-term strategic plan on how to do this. As one of the oldest cities in the country, our infrastructure has issues with wood pipes, clay pipes, trees that are growing into people's basements, the roots going into their driveways. I ran across a man the other day that said he knows when there's a main break, a water main break, because he can see it first in his sub-basement. And if he had to tackle that, it would cost him $80,000. So just as his personal, out of his personal expense. But I think this is one of the things that I think that SUNY Poly can help us with when I talk about having them assist us in fixing our infrastructure. If you're talking about an organization that it's a $30 billion operation, why can't we look to them to help us deal with something that is could possibly affect them as well? I also think that the governor just announced some funding recently that Albany should tap into to make sure that we're continuing to look neighborhood by neighborhood. And we can't wait until the breaks happen. We can't wait until there is a problem. I think we have to be very proactive in our approach to dealing with this issue.
Carolyn, thank you. Frank?
Thank you.
Yes, streets, sidewalks, curbs, water, sewer, people care about these things. I've been out walking, talking to Democratic voters here in the city of Albany since March 13th, and it is one of the most paramount concerns that people have is that their infrastructure in their neighborhood is deficient and or not at top standards. So we have to do so much more with respect to our water and sewer systems as well. Of course, we did have the sinkhole on South Lake, and we did have another one on Madison Avenue, and we seem to have many in that part of town. For me, first thing we would do is we would treat the water funds in the city as an enterprise fund. They are not to be used by us as elected officials, which has happened over the past several years, as money to go in the city general fund. And that has happened to the tune of $3.6 million. So that is one item that we would immediately address. We would have those funds quarantined into an enterprise fund. Additionally, we have to work with our state and our federal leaders, but certainly with our state leaders as well, to achieve more funding here for us in the Capital Region and specifically for us here in the city of Albany. With those partnerships in place, I believe we could have significant amount of infrastructure monies and we could work with various labor units that want to do great work here in the city of Albany, and that would be a great partnership going forward to create jobs and help us have a sustainable infrastructure system going forward.
I'm going to give 30 seconds more for a response from Kathy Sheehan.
So I'll explain this once again. We have not depleted money from the water department. The city of Albany provides multiple services to our water department: legal services, HR, IT, all administrative services. The water department could create those services itself and pay for them, or it could purchase those services from the city. In the past, the city was not getting any payment for providing those services, so the cost of it was falling to our taxpayers, which include those not-for-profits, as opposed to the ratepayers that include not-for-profits. They pay water rates. They don't pay taxes. So we moved the funding to where it belongs.
Thank you. Okay, we were underground, and now we'll go above ground for a follow-up infrastructure question. In recent months, city residents have increasingly noticed and complained about the many houses adorned with a red X, alerting first responders and contractors that the building is unsafe to enter. Many of these buildings have been abandoned by their owners. What is your plan to fix or remove these properties, which are safety hazards and can bring down neighbors' property values? And we'll begin with Carolyn.
I've given a lot of thought to this, and I believe that before we become another Jeopardy question, we really need to make sure that we evaluate these buildings to see how stable are they, can they be reused, can they be sold, and or should they be demolished? We often say we have 1,100 buildings that are abandoned or vacant. We almost say it with pride sometimes. And I think that we have to look at each one of these buildings and see what kind of use they, potential use or non-use do they have. We also need to look at the Albany County Land Bank Corporation and really evaluate its efficiency and effectiveness. Because I've talked to many people who have tried to purchase some of these homes, some of these buildings, and the red tape and the long period of time it takes them to purchase a building has caused many of them to just move on and say, no, I don't want to do business in Albany. So I really think we need to evaluate just how effective that enterprise is. And then Finally, we need to make sure that as we create a pathway for people to purchase these homes, we need to make sure that they have then we have to assist them in achieving access to resources to make sure that it's not cost prohibitive for them to do the work. Because you can get the building and then find out, I really don't have the resources to do what I had planned to do. So I think we have to really do a yeoman's job to make sure that that resources are available.
Next to Frank, same question.
Talked earlier about economic development in the city of Albany and many of these buildings that are vacant abandoned throughout our historic neighborhoods in particular are right now financially upside down. It is impossible for someone to come in and develop a building like that and redevelop a building like that. So there's an incentive in place that we can use for young men and women in our city who have a skill, have a trade that they can go in and fix these buildings. It provides for 9 years reduced payments on the increased valuation. For me, I think that is a far better investment of our dollars here publicly than incentivizing luxury housing. Of course, in our city, it's no secret, in Park South, you have luxury developed units that are not going to be paying school, city, county, or library taxes until 2038. So for me, having that type of corporate welfare in place in our city is not acceptable. We need to invest in our own people, improve and increase our stock of affordable housing with the incentive I previously mentioned, and we can create local income and local wealth. Those are things that, as mayor, I would be happy to lead our city in that direction. And if I found young men and women throughout this city that had an interest in those vacant abandoned buildings, I'd be first to jump on site with them and talk to them about it and find that incentive for them. Thank you.
Kathy Sheehan, same question.
So in looking at what we do about our vacant and abandoned buildings, we've taken a very strategic approach. One of the biggest issues around vacancy is our own zoning. As we went to rezone the city, we found examples where 80% of the properties on a particular street were not zoned consistent, were not being used consistent with our zoning. And what happens when a building is empty for 6 months is you can't keep that variance with that building. And so we had properties that had been cut up into four apartments, were being used as four units, and they were zoned one or two family. So our rezone is going to help us move forward with development. We've put together $1 million in grants that are available that we launched this year for people to utilize to take those upside down buildings and provide that bridge financing so that we can get projects done. Those are grants of between $10,000 and $50,000. There are tax incentives in place. And the land bank has sold 130 properties. They've stabilized 176. This is hard work, because many of the areas where these properties are located are areas where there has been decades and decades of disinvestment. So we can't forget that we have to continue to do workforce development. We have to continue to address issues of poverty so that we can make these neighborhoods viable, livable neighborhoods for the people living there to be able to invest in the incredible, beautiful structures that are there.
Thank you very much. We're going to move on to the arts now. One of the most controversial items the Common Council has considered over the past year has been the plan to transfer city ownership of the Palace Theater to the venue's board as part of a major renovation. Mr. Commisso, in particular, has been a vocal critic of that move. Now, in line with that, one of our viewers, Richard Johnson, asked via Facebook, for all the candidates, how will you support and help the revitalization of the arts in Albany and the plan to improve the Palace Theater and support Park Playhouse? And we're going to start with Frank.
Sure, and I think the arts are a huge economic driver for the city of Albany. And that is very true in downtown Albany and true throughout our city. Here we sit today on Central Avenue and throughout Albany. We have a tremendous commitment to the arts. The Palace Theater, I felt, the transfer of the Palace Theater was a bad deal for taxpayers. Luckily, there was a handful of us on the Albany Common Council that were able to mitigate what I thought ultimately was a bad deal, but it turned out to be better. We didn't sell it for $1. So for me, that is part of our job as council members, is looking at contracts that the city may entangle itself in and addressing a contract that was going to be lacking for taxpayers. Should we have asked for a share of box office sales Concessions? Absolutely. And we didn't do that, so shame on the city that we did not achieve that. But we could have done those things. At minimum, we could have taken the debt that we had associated with that facility and transferred it over to the Palace Board. Of course, that did not happen. So we have to move on. That now is something that has passed the Common Council. I'm committed to the Palace Theater being at its current location and having some significant investment going forward. We do not know where they stand as far as raising the millions of dollars they talked about, but we look forward to working with them over the next several years.
Thank you. Kathy?
So the transfer of the Palace was one of those things that should just never have been controversial. It's a $5 million liability to our taxpayers. Insurance with respect to that building exceeded $100,000 a year. And so we had a lease that I inherited that the Common Council approved, a 10-year lease of $1 a year in rent. So far from being bad for our taxpayers, having the opportunity to negotiate a sale at a fair price. It was never going to be sold for a dollar. That's a fiction that keeps getting perpetrated over here. It was never going to be sold for a dollar. We agreed to do two assessments. We looked at those assessments. We came up with a price. The council was involved, and council leadership was involved in those negotiations. There is a commitment to a project labor agreement, a very exciting expansion that will increase economic development and support those restaurants and small businesses in our downtown. That's only possible if it's not owned by the city. The city isn't able to take advantage of historic tax credits and other sources of grant funding that will be now available to take this theater to the next level. And it will really be exciting for our downtown. And it was a win-win all the way around. We no longer have to worry about fixing the electrical, the air conditioning, all of the improvements that needed to be made to that building, and it will be revitalized.
Kathy, thank you. Carolyn?
I know we've all had the opportunity to go and attend a show or see a movie at the Palace Theater, but if you've ever went down into what I call the bowels of that theater, you can recognize that we were never going to be able to finance a refurbishment of that theater from top to bottom. I support this capital campaign and program for the Palace Theater. I supported the city selling the Palace Theater to the board. But I also did it under very strict conditions. And as of today, the contract still has not been signed because there are a number of issues, community issues that were brought up. People talked about the community benefits agreement as it relates to job placement. Because you're right in a community that abuts North Albany and Arbor Hill. So people are concerned, how is this $65 million capital campaign going to affect me? How am I going to benefit from that? So we talk about jobs. They have to be included in the contract. We talk about the ability to, all of the additions to the theater. How are they going to improve the community? How are they going to have access? How's the community going to have access? The Arbor Hill Neighborhood Association has been very adamant about being included in the discussions with the Palace Theater and the projects that they're going to undertake going forward. So this is not something that has been done in isolation.
Thank you.
Thank you. It looks like our last question tonight comes from social media. Casey Ballard on Facebook wants to know, why should Albany be a sanctuary city, and how is it beneficial to American citizens? We will start with Kathy.
I issued an executive order naming, making Albany a welcoming city. The president has taken the term sanctuary city and turned it into something that sounds like it is somehow wrong, that it is somehow not what we should be doing as Americans, making sure that our communities are welcoming to immigrants. We are following, and my executive order follows, the recommendations of the New York State Attorney General, of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, which is made up of Democratic mayors and Republican mayors, and of the International Association of Chiefs of Police, and of our police department, of ensuring that if somebody contacts the police, we are not going to have them be in fear that they can't report a crime because we're going to inquire as to their legal status. We should not be forced by our federal government to undertake an unfunded mandate of enforcing immigration laws. The federal government is responsible for enforcing immigration laws. We will comply with subpoenas. We will continue to do what we know is right, what has been found by the courts to be right, but we need to make sure that people in our city feel safe. And all immigrants, all newcomers to our city, they live in fear. I've met with doctors, I've met with engineers and scientists, people from all walks of life who are here as legal immigrants who are afraid because of the rhetoric.
Thank you.
Next to Carolyn.
I know that this is an issue that's very sensitive to a lot of people. If people choose to call Albany their home, then we should be welcoming to them. I too believe that we should not be called upon to spend city resources to ensure that the INS can come and round up people in a community. But I also recognize that if anyone is here illegally, if anyone is here who commits a crime, we should make sure that they are have to answer for their activities the same way I would have to answer for my activities if I were to commit a crime. But I believe that we should be a city that is welcoming people, asking you to come, not shutting people out. I've had the opportunity to interact with individuals from around the world. I've said earlier this evening that Albany has become an international city. And if we are not taking advantage of that, that cultural enrichment that is coming into our city, then I don't know what we have, what kind of future we have for ourselves. We have a school district where there's 75 languages being spoken in our school district. So we cannot afford to be afraid to be a sanctuary city because someone does not understand what that means and how it can be a positive for our community.
Thank you.
And to Frank, same question.
I've heard a great deal of frustration over the past several months and this entire calendar year about our status. At one point, we were not a sanctuary city, then we were a sanctuary city. More recently, I understand we're a welcoming city. For me, we need to provide opportunities for people who come to our city. From a housing and an economic perspective, we need to have those opportunities available, and I'm fully committed to that as mayor, that throughout all our neighborhoods, we would work with every community, every people of all different faiths and backgrounds, and ensure that they have the highest level quality services and the best partnership with the City of Albany as possible. As the federal government is currently defining a sanctuary city, in those instances whereby the Albany Police Department has someone in custody for a violent crime, felony crime, sexual assault, anytime fingerprints are run through the database, in those instances, if the federal government was to ask our police department for a 48-hour detainer, I would comply with those. I think that achieves us a maintenance of our current federal funding for law enforcement. And for me, my disagreement with the policies of a given president that we currently have should not mean that I would grandstand and call ourselves a sanctuary city when that's not the case.
Thank you.
It's now time for the candidates to deliver their closing statements. We'll begin with Carolyn McLaughlin.
I first want to say thank you for the opportunity to be here tonight. And I want to say that, you know, I'm sitting here running for mayor of Albany because for the same reason that I ran for office 20 years ago as a council member, it's because I wanted to speak for folks that felt like they were undervalued, underestimated, and marginalized. These are people who felt that they did not have a voice. I've been that voice for the past 20 years that I've been on the council. I'm here with an opportunity to marry my professional experience with my political experience. I've been someone who has listened to people, someone who has showed that I have compassion and caring about my community, but more importantly, I have responded to those issues that have been brought to me. So I am here to try to take that to the next level because I do believe that we can have a lot of influence on decisions that are being made in the city of Albany, but you have to be in control to make sure that people are making the right decisions that are in the best interest of all of the residents of Albany. And so often people feel that are looking at this, that are watching this, that are listening to this, so often people feel like that I don't count. but I want you to know that you do count. And as mayor, I will see you, I will hear what you have to say, and I will respond to those issues that you bring to the table. Because this is not the tale of two cities. This is a city, one Albany, where everyone will be recognized.
Thank you. And Frank?
Growing up in Albany, in a Democratic household, my brother and I were told you become a Democrat when you turn 18, because Democrats look out for working class people. They look out for seniors on fixed incomes, children that need programming after school and in the summer, many items we talked about tonight. And for me, that is not what we currently see. I ran for the Common Council in 2009. When I was elected and sworn in 2010, I was the youngest member ever elected. Now I'm raising a family. My wife Brittany is here. My daughter Gianna is home right now. And I want this to be a city that is safe, that is affordable. I want it to be a city where we respect our employees and they feel valued in their workplace. For me, we are not there. So as mayor, I'm committed to those constituencies, be those seniors on fixed incomes that are having such a struggle to pay their taxes. If a young couple moves into Albany and has a huge escrow payment that they cannot afford for the city, they need to know that there's folks in City Hall that actually want to work with them. And it is so sad that as we are here in a Democratic primary, we have this great level of apathy reflected over so many years, where in our last election, we had just 10,000 people participate in the election. We need to do better here, all three of us, to get more people to feel inspired, to feel that they have a role in city government. I'm committed to that as mayor, and I look forward to doing that in 2018.
Thank you. Kathy Sheehan?
When I ran for mayor 4 years ago, it started in living rooms across the city where I talked to people about what they love about Albany, why they live here, and some of the things that they'd like to see change. And after I won the election, we pulled together a large group of people, about 125 people, and they created a transition report for me because we had to take all those hopes and dreams and put them into action. And I've used that transition report as the playbook for the last 4 years. And the thing that was really running throughout that playbook, all seven areas that we looked at and broke down, was the idea of equity, that we needed to ensure that we were treating all of our communities with equity, and that there were many neighborhoods that had been neglected for many, many years. And so we've gone about to ensure that we move forward with the community, listening to the community, being in the community. We've held 200 meetings just this year, community meetings. We've attended 700 more, my staff and people throughout City Hall, because we need to be in the community to make good choices. And that's how we ended up with new stairs and a wheelchair ramp into Lincoln Park. It's how we ended up with a new softball field and new bathrooms at Arbor Hill Park and changes to parks throughout the city. It's how we've made decisions with respect to investments in infrastructure to deal with devastating flooding that was occurring year after year and was being ignored. That's the work that we've accomplished. That's the work that I've done. And that's the work that I'll continue to do, because working with the community and listening, we can move forward together.
Thank you, Kathy. That's all the time we have for tonight's debate among the candidates for the Democratic nomination for Mayor of Albany, Mayor Kathy Sheehan, Common Council President Carolyn McLaughlin, and Common Councilor Frank Camiso Jr. Primary day is September 12th. I would like to thank our panelists, Benita Zahn, Ian Pickus, and the staffs of WNYT and AMC for producing tonight's debate. If you missed part of the program or like to watch again, we'll be rebroadcasting the full debate on Friday at 1 p.m. on WAMC and Sunday at WNYA My 4 at 9 p.m. I'm Alan Chartok. Now the audience can applaud the candidates.